All right, I'm Rachel. This is Michael Van Loon. We're going to be presenting some new C++ alone features, specifically the ones that you can use in Boost on a 98 compiler. As a result, we won't get to talk about things like move semantics, deleted member functions, variadic templates, or anything like that. Who this presentation is for, perhaps you're like us, stuck on a 98 compiler, wanting to hear what's new, or perhaps you're from a different language background. Maybe you want to take a tour, or maybe you had to check out of your hotel early and looking for a quiet place to nap. So we will kind of begin the discussion with some scope-based resource management, followed by some other things like smart pointers and other line item features. So actually, Michael Van Loon, you want to explain what the frack is Boost?
So, Boost is the second most authoritative source of modern C++ libraries that would be outside of the standard libraries themselves, obviously. Peer-reviewed, portable, they run just about everywhere. And one of the cool things about Boost is it's kind of an experimental lab for stuff that's made it into the standard, made it into TR1 and in some other ways have made it into the standard library. So. We are not Boost developers. We're Boost users, just like you guys. So we're going to approach it from that perspective.
Okay, so specifically the ones we're going to talk about, smart pointers, regular expressions, threading, scoped enums, container initialization, type deduction. We're also going to cover some Boost libraries that we use at F5, such as multi-index containers, string processing, and ASIO. And now I'll just hand it back to Michael, who's going to discuss scope-based resource management.
So, we want to take a quick detour down the RAII / SBRM path because it's one of the most fundamental things, I think, in C++. One of its most fundamental aspects is one of the most valuable things, and it's also really fundamental to both the standard libraries and Boost in a lot of different ways. So, what is RAII? Resource acquisition is initialization. It means that your objects are initialized with reasonable default values. It means that your objects clean themselves up properly. And so I prefer to use the term scope-based resource management because it gives a little bit better idea of how the objects are used in a lot of ways, and primarily cleaning up resources is one of the most important attributes. But realize we're kind of talking about the same thing. So, what is it that it does for us? Well, it's deterministic. One of the things that some of the other languages don't really give us is deterministic cleanup. We can rely on our destructors happening reliably when we expect them every time, instead of delayed garbage collection. Standard ordering rules apply. So things go out of scope in the order that we expect. Encapsulation. Our cleanup code is kept with the object code. It's not scattered all about our code in various different places, which locality, of course, covers as well. We don't have to have finally blocks everywhere that make sure that things don't get cleaned up improperly. It's all nicely contained in our object management code. And because of all of these things, of course, it's exception safe. Stack pace variables, exit scope in many different ways, return statements, go-tos, exceptions, and these things we just talked about, of course, make sure that the right stuff happens. So let's have a quick little code example because it's early in the morning. So a lot of people here probably are already familiar with this stuff, but it's kind of a cool thing to go over just for review. So let's say that you have a class C. It does something. It's great. You like to use it. And the old style of doing things, you might, because we're talking about resource management dynamically, instead of allocating it on the stack, maybe you'd make a new one. You do some stuff with it, and you have to remember to delete it. Only once, always once. this is a really simple example, of course, but you know, in real programs, that might be a much more complex API. Maybe you allocate it somewhere and you have an interface that says, well, the requester owns it and has to remember to delete it. And then that has to be done everywhere that it's used, once and only once. Can be kind of messy. So what if we did instead did something like this? We create a little pointer proxy object, call it SBRM. In this thing, we give it a copy of our pointer. In its destructor, it deletes the pointer. And otherwise, it kind of acts as a proxy for the pointer so that we can use it to do things. And when we use it, it might look something like this. Of course, we're going to create another new C. We're going to do some work with it. And then it automatically goes out of scope. This, incidentally, is a really simple example of a smart pointer. The attributes here, of course, are that it's deterministic. We know that however we exit this scope, our delete will happen. It encapsulates our cleanup logic and makes it nicely contained. It's local. It's in that one spot. I don't have it over here. And, of course, it's exception safe. So which leads us, of course, into our smart pointer toolbox. So the things that we have available to us that we're going to talk about are shared pointer, scope pointer, unique pointer, some of the tools we have with shared pointer, and weak pointer. So what are the features that these things give us? They're SBRM, RAII compliant, get all those benefits. Some of them have custom deleters, so we don't have to use them with just new and delete. Some of them are reference counted, and all of them give us these deterministic guarantees. So what are the benefits of that? No more memory leaks, no more multiple freeze. Our code's easier to read, it's easier to maintain because we don't have to worry about accidentally coding around a delete or forgetting one, which means less bugs. Simpler logic, like I was talking about earlier, say you have APIs where the owner gets it or creates it and the receiver gets it. None of that's necessary because the reference counting can keep track of the ownership for you. Briefly, pointer best practices in C++, avoid explicit new and delete whenever possible. You can use make shared, you can use a custom class, kind of like the thing that we started to develop up on the slide. Now put it up there twice, avoid deletes. If you have deletes in your code, it might be a sign that you need to rethink the logic a little bit because you're handling them explicitly. It's easy to forget to delete. It's easy to maintain around. Avoid handling raw pointers. Stick them in a smart pointer as quickly as you can. That way their lifetime is properly contained. Or better yet, don't even handle the pointer at all. Use make shared and have it do the new and for you and create a pointer that's already contained. And how do we do this? Of course, with the containers that we're going to talk about. So, scope pointer, unique pointer, what are these things? Scope pointer is something that Boost created, and unique pointer is an improved version that C++ has. Both of them are for local scope stuff. Both of them do SBRM, RAII. Because they're simpler, they're more efficient than shared pointer. If you have unique pointer, C++ 11, use it. Otherwise, scope pointer and shared pointer can do that work for you. So, scope pointer, it's in Boost. It has neither move nor copy semantics. It's truly local only. There's a separate scoped array for new array and delete array. It does not support custom deleters, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the cool thing about a scope pointer is because it's local only, it gives you guarantees that it cannot be shared, which is nice for also conveying to maintainers of your code, users of your code, that this is the API I expect. I don't want this shared. Unique pointer. It's got a lot of the benefits of scope pointer, but in addition, it has move semantics, which means I can embed it in standard containers. I can return it from functions. It natively supports a delete array by template magic. It can figure out which one you're using. It supports custom deleters, and it has a make unique function in C++ 14. So an example. We've got our magical C class again. Let's say that we also just create a little factory function, and it returns C pointers. It creates new ones for me and gives them back to me. And this is how you'd use a scope pointer. It's pretty simple stuff. I will declare a scope pointer. I'll give it something that I've created. It'll hang on to it, and I can do some work. When I'm done, it goes away. So why wouldn't you use just a stack-based C? Well, maybe you're calling a function. It might not be a factory. Maybe it's something else, an API. And so you're not in control of how that object gets created. You just get a pointer to one. Well, this allows us to contain it in a local scope and make sure it goes away. If I throw an exception in the middle of that code, it still gets cleaned up. Unique pointer works a lot like scope pointer. I can do another factory. But because it has move semantics, instead of returning a raw pointer, I can return an already wrapped unique pointer. And the move semantics will return that properly, do the right thing. I could use it in some code already wrapped. I could do it like we just did with the scope pointer. Get me one, put it in here, do my work, it goes away. Because it's got the move semantics, I can also stick it in standard containers and use it that way. It works very nicely. Everything cleans up nicely when it's all done. So, shared pointer. Well, what if you want to move it around in your code? It needs to be shared, created somewhere, used in different pieces of code, and then eventually go away when the last consumer is done with it. Shared pointer does that. It, of course, adheres to all the same SBRM RAI principles. It's a reference kind of container. Of course, it's copyable and movable. Like unique pointer, it supports custom deleters. It has a make shared function, which we'll talk about in a minute, and this enabled shared from this class, which does some really cool stuff. Do unique pointer, scope pointer instead of shared pointer if you can. I mean, if it's local, it's a more efficient thing. So, to see if you're really awake, we're gonna talk about how it's put together just briefly. I did a talk on this with a little more detail earlier in the week, but basically this is what a shared pointer does. You have a shared pointer object, and it contains a pointer to the thing that you are going to delete, right? It also contains a pointer to a reference count container. This is the thing that tracks how many reference counts you have on your object. It also has a pointer to it, maybe your custom deleter function, and we'll get into the weak reference stuff in a minute. Now let's say you take your shared pointer P1 and you create a shared pointer P2 that points to the same thing. They contain very little information, but they both point to this same count block, which now is a count of two. You can also do something like, say, T2 is a drive class of T1. Then they're related in some way. You can do a dynamic cast and create another shared pointer, P3, that's to a different type T2 that's related, and it will also point to the same shared memory block. When the last one goes out of scope, it all goes away properly. Was there a question? Okay. So how does that get used? It's kind of like this. So we have some code here where we use make shared to create a new object of type C and stick it into a shared pointer, P1, which now, of course, has used kind of one. It has one consumer. I can create another shared pointer, P2. It's kind of hard to use the mouse pointer. It keeps trying to go away. Create a P2 from P1. Now we have a use count of two. We have two shared pointers pointing to the same object. And then I could create a new P3 that's on a different C. It has a use count of one. I could take my P3, assign it to P2, and of course now my P1 use count goes from two down to one. My P3 goes from one up to two. When it goes out of scope, everything gets cleaned up. So we can also stick them in containers, just like we did with the unique pointer earlier. We can use the return already wrapped pointer. We can stick it in a vector. Works real nicely. And then, of course, there's the coolness of enabled shared from this. Say you want to do some magic. You have a class. and you want to, say, maybe pass it through a C interface or use a reference to it or use a raw pointer for some reason, but on the other side somewhere, you want to get another shared pointer so that you can manage the lifetime. You might create a factory method. It uses make shared to return one of these things already wrapped. That's cool. Make shared or bad create goes into my P1. I have a shared pointer to a brand new created bad object. That works. I get a raw pointer to it. Maybe I pass it around. Maybe I stick it in a C interface. It comes out the other side. I want to reinflate it into a shared pointer so it doesn't go away prematurely. So I do my getSP method, and I get another shared pointer on this. It's the same object, two shared pointers. Problem is, this one is completely unrelated to this one. These two don't know about each other. So what's going to happen is, when the first one goes out of scope, it's going to delete the object, and the second one's still hanging onto it, and then you're going to end up using an object that is already deleted, and that's not good. So that's why it's bad. How can we be good? We can use the enabled shared from this class. And it looks the same in the factory. We still use make shared. We get it the same way with our factory. We do our raw pointer magic, or maybe we add a reference to it, whatever. And we get on the other side and we want to get another shared pointer. Instead of wrapping it in an unrelated shared pointer, we use shared from this. And the base class that we're driving from has knowledge of that shared reference count block, and it does the right thing, creates us a new shared pointer that's related to the first one. Everything's happy, it's good, it works. This is used in some of the patterns in Boost, so it's kind of handy that way. We'll talk about briefly the custom deleters. This is available unique pointers and shared pointers. What this lets you do is, say you want to manage a resource that's not a new delete sort of thing. Maybe it's got some funky memory allocator, or maybe it's not memory at all. Maybe it's something completely different. You can create your own function to release the object. Say we have at the top here, we have some sort of factory that creates it the correct way with whatever allocation scheme that it uses. I stick it in my shared pointer by calling my factory. But in addition, I write my method to release the object properly with whatever means that is, and I give the function to my constructor, my shared pointer, and instead of doing delete, it's going to call my method to free up the thing properly. And so this is a great way to handle memory allocation schemes or allocating things that don't use traditional memory allocation. If you're curious, this is in a constructor rather than part of the type, because that allows you to pass around shared pointer with a shared res type. And maybe you're on a pool-based memory allocation scheme, and you have 10 pools, and you have different releaser methods for each pool, yet the objects are the same type. That would allow you to continue to pass them back and forth because they would have the same type signatures. Briefly, weak pointer, and then we can move on to something more interesting than this. Weak pointer is a cool class because it helps you break circular references. It goes along with shared pointer, but it does not hold a shared pointer reference. Obviously, that's why it's a weak pointer. It can't be used to access the resource without creating a new shared pointer. So how would you use a weak pointer? Let's say, for instance, I declare a W1 that's a weak pointer for our C class. This doesn't yet hold a reference to any C. It's just been declared. Now let's say we create a new shared pointer for C with our make shared. We stick it in a shared pointer P1 as a use count of 1. I assign my P1 to my weak pointer. That still is not actually using any more references. It's still a reference count of 1 because the weak pointer isn't actually using that object. But it knows that it's valid. It's not expired. The way that I would get another reference is I have to create a new shared pointer from my weak pointer by calling the lock method. Now I have a use count of 2, P2 is valid. when all this stuff goes out of scope, I have my two shared pointers here. They're going to hit my scope here. They're both going to go, they're going to get deleted. They're going to deallocate this guy right here. And I come back out here. My W1's still a valid object, but it knows that the thing that it points to is no longer valid. And it also can tell me that there are no longer any references on it. So this is a really cool way to handle that thing if I need it in a kind of a weak reference semantic without having to potentially deallocate an invalid pointer to an object that's already been deleted. So with that, we'll move on to a totally different topic.
Thanks, Michael. Okay. I'm going to touch on scoped and unscoped enums. As of C++ 11, our old traditional enums are now known as unscoped enums for these reasons up here. There was issues with them. They have namespace pollution. The names leak into the scope containing their enum definition. They typically are defined in a global header, made compile times really gross, and you have to define your enum at the time of declaration. Here's what they roughly look like. We have implicit conversions, which is typically unsafe. If I don't need to explain to you the regressions if I were to add or remove any of these items. However, it still does happen. A senior GUI dev at F5 Networks in our latest release, bug 473202, creating an IPv4 node results in an IPv6 node. There's an enum tag in there somewhere. So, what do these look like in C++ 11? We have enum classes. They're strongly typed. So the first example, the default type will be an integer. The second example is set to a char, which means that the enum value is stored in 8 bits. It's not a real char. So there's no implicit type conversions. Attempting to do so will fail to compile. However, if you really, really wanted to do it, you could just cast it. These are also forward declared. And actually in C++ 11, unscoped enums also support forward declaration and type specification. So the resulting net benefit of scoped enums are the reduction in namespace pollution and type safety. However, there are some scenarios in which you would prefer to use an unscoped enum. However, I will leave that to for you guys to read Scott Meyer's new book, Effective Modern C++. So this is what Boost offers. It's a useful parallel for those of us stuck in the O3 compiler. It doesn't quite offer forward declaration. However, the benefits are type specification, reduction in namespace pollution, and type safety. What this generates, and I pasted as much as it could fit into this slide. For the O3 compiler, it generates a forward declaration of a struct type. On a C++ 11 compiler, it will generate the correct enum class. All right, container initialization and assignment. So some of the issues in 98 is that it was hard to initialize containers with non-default values. There's no static initialization, and it was hard to assign a set of values. So what C++ 11 offers is improved syntax, better library support, things are easier to read and write. Boost has a similar solution, although it's a completely different syntax, so we'll go over that. So this is what 98 looked like. It's a tedious repeated call of pushback, insert. You cannot statically initialize them. In C++ 11, they address the issue with new syntax methods and initializer lists. It can be used for static initialization. Actually, line 17 will show that to you. It is also more performant, but best of all, it is cleaner, easier to read. Almost looks like a scripting language. And Boost offers a library called Assign. It does not support static initialization. The code looks kind of similar, but it's not the same as the C++ 11 standard. Actually, on line 24, you will see the plus equal, which is nice. I think it should be in the standard. It's not in 11 or 14. You'll also have to include the Boost header. Boost has its own namespace version of the vector, but underneath the covers, it actually uses a real standard vector. So, And finally, I'm going to cover some boost string processing before moving on to the next section of our presentation. This is unique to Boost. There's no parallels to 98 or 11. It's just a library of handy string processing functions. And it's typically more performant and desirable to use them over regexes.
Notice we use the word performant quite a bit because we wanted to see if Chandler would show up.
Yeah, we can challenge him. Okay, so this is kind of the a C-based example, tokenizing a string with a space delimiter. Typically, how you might do that is call str talk until you reach the end of the string. 98 didn't really offer a better alternative. We have string find, pretty much the same algorithm. You call find repeatedly, updating its position until you reach the end of the string. And there's no C++ 11, so I'm jumping right over to Boost. So Boost library has, in this case, we have split. We can specify a set of delimiters. In this case, I'm just have one, which is the space. And it just makes it so much nicer, one line, and then I can do whatever I want with it. Other cool string processing libraries that I've used, here's some examples. It just makes string processing a lot easier. So lexical cast down here, you can cast between integers and strings back and forth, different types. Boost algorithm join joins a vector of strings into one string, replacing tokens within your string here. There's actually a lot more of transforms and other items, but you can check out the Boost string processing headers. And then I'm going to hand it back to you, Mike, who will talk about regexes.
So, as far as string processing goes, if that's not good enough for you, we have a regex library available to us. And regex, of course, stands for regular expressions, which is an industry standard way to do sophisticated pattern matching. And if this is all new to you, you might be at the wrong conference. There are, of course, many good C regex libraries that have been around for quite some time. But we're going to find that we like ours better, and I'll show you why. Here's an example. Excuse the wall of code, but this is kind of an example how you might use the POSIX regex library, which is a C library to do some pattern matching. And some of the attributes that we can see here are that if I wanted to compile a regular expression, which is generally something you do for performance, it's not something that I can do with static initialization because I have to call a function, I have to check a return code, and so it's something I'm going to do in a C-style way. I'm going to probably call it somewhere near the beginning of my code, and then use it properly, and that's actually not captured here, that and it is done before this function's called. But some other attributes are I've got matcher objects, which they're not objects per se, they're structs, and I'm going to declare it just a simple C-style array of them. How big? Well, I don't know, I just kind of have to guess. This regular expression up here parses a URL into its different parts, the scheme, host, port, path, query, fragment. It turns out that there's 13 groups in there. So I just, you know, said, give me 16, just so I have enough, maybe a few extra in case somebody modifies the regular expression. Kind of messy, but it works. And then when I get my results, there's a lot of substring extraction to get the groupings back into the strings. All a little messy, but it all works. This has been around for a while. It does the right thing. There's another good C library that's very popular, PCRE, the Perl compatible regular expressions. Even a little bit more code to do the same thing. It has a very similar interface, but even a little bit more funkiness that really required me to write an extra method to extract strings without making every line be monstrously large. How can we do it better? We can use C++. So PCRE has a CPP wrapper. It, as you can see, does the exact same thing with much less code, which is a good thing. Less code is generally less bugs, and it's also easier to read and maintain. It's a little bit funky though, because it's not an interface that's really similar to any other regular expression libraries I've used. There's no matcher object. If I want to match groups in my regular expression, I pass them as positional parameters to the function, and I have to pass addresses of variables. So that's kind of not very C++-ish, and it's not very standard as a regex library. But as you can see, it works, and it does so with much cleaner code. So that's a good thing. But can we do better yet? I think we can. And the Boost regex, the C++11 regex libraries are very similar. They have common roots. And you could do something like this. It looks like a standard regex library like you might see in many other languages, you know, Java, Python, Ruby, all those guys. I have different kind of matcher objects that I can check for my matching. I get my groupings back out positionally, or I can use name groupings. It's all very straightforward, very simple, and I get what I'm looking for. I like it. And so if you don't have C++11 yet, the Boost regex library does the job really nicely. There's some stuff you can do with the C++ libraries that you can't do with the C libraries at all. For example, regular expression replacements. This is the PCRE CPP code. The Boost and standard library versions look very similar. Syntactically, they are just about the same number of lines of code. I won't go into great detail about what happens here, but basically I'm taking that pattern right there in regex RE, and I'm using it to substitute things in my path of my URL and positionally replace them, and they should come out looking like the thing on the bottom, and they do. All of this code compiles. So cool, because that's something you can't even do with the C libraries. C++11 or Boost, either one, they're going to do the job for you. And so, talking about some other stuff you just can't do in C, how about multi-index container?
Okay, so this is a library that we use at F5. It's nothing, there's nothing like this in C++11 or any plans for it. But at F5, we use this in a lot of our subsystems, daemons, typically used as kind of a small little config engine or something like that. What it is, it's a container that supports multiple indexes, so keys can be specified as unique, non-unique, and they can be over a single attribute, or you can create a composite key with it. It also has some kind of database-y-like notions, like primary keys, partial key searching as well. Multi-index container also features key updates for re-indexing, which cannot be done with standard containers. And best of all, it's faster than developing your own with map or multi-map. So let's demo it. Here I have a demo class. We'll just have a node. It will have a name, an enabled state, its address and port. And this will show up in each subsequent slide, so you don't have to write it down.
This fuzzy thing down here is what she just showed you.
Yeah, next time I'll make it bigger. Right? Not take a screenshot. I don't know. So how you might do this with a standard container, maybe we'll do a map between the name and a reference to the node. To do a find, we'll just do a container find. If I wanted to do something over a set of enabled nodes, I might iterate through the entire map and do something with it. So what multi-index container definition might look like. Again, here I have the name. I give it a struct tag. So here it's node index. I'm going to define how it will be inserted and retrieved from the container. And here it's hashed, and the names are unique. So we choose this form because it's the most performant. And then here on the second one, I have an enabled state. These are not unique, so I'm going to have them ordered, so retrievals would be a lot faster as well, and insertions. And I gave it a name for enabled index. How you might do a find? Well, it's very similar to the standard container. In fact, a lot of its member methods are similar to standard containers, so here nodes.find spam. And if I wanted to get the range of enabled nodes, I would do equal range true, and this would have a iter first and iter second or last, I don't remember.
And so this would be why the second index was ordered because we're going to get a range of all of the enabled or all of the disabled, which will be adjacent in the container.
Yep. and here's an example of a composite key. I can have more than one member item here. So here I have an address port. It's a composite key here, and I gave it the a new name. And to do a find, we have to make a tuple. And if I was to do a partial key search, we have to remove from the end. So in this case, I would just remove port 80 and get a range of nodes that have this IP address. So I mentioned that we could do index updating, and we can do that with the replace function. So let's say I want to take spam and re-enable it. So I would do a find, I would set enabled, and then I would take that pointer and do a node replace, and it automatically re-updates its indexes.
And it should be noticed that the node replace is just updating the index. It's much more efficient than doing a remove and reinsert.
Okay, so while we're here, I'm also going to introduce very briefly. Boost also has the C++11 auto. So if you remember, the iterator names were like really long. Well, we can use Boost Auto to shorten it up. So in C++11, they have included a new feature, auto type deduction. How it works, it mainly uses template type deduction with the exception of uniform initialization. But it is available in Boost, and you can go ahead and use that.
Is the multi-index
container?
Yeah, sorry.
A bind map. I've never used a bind map. Explain it to me.
A bind map.
Oh.
Oh, bi-directional.
Right. It's. I think you might want to analyze what your use case is to see which one you like better. The advantage to the multi-index container are that you can have, you can have a wide number of indexes. You know, you could have 10 different indexes on there, each on different attributes. If you have some complex objects in there, you can extract. Indexes by variables in your object or by calling functions on the object, so it's very flexible.
Right.
If, however, maybe it's not as performant as the alternative, and the alternative is good enough. For instance, a simple map might just be all you need. Then go with that. What this has is much more flexibility
Sure.
No, this is one we've used extensively because of its flexibility. I've never actually used BIMAP.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. BoostThread.
Ah.
That's you.
So if that wasn't exciting enough, how about some threading? So, BoostThread. It's a library that heavily influenced the C++11 thread library. Because it, in this particular talk, we're under the premise that you don't have C++11 yet, and so obviously it's going to have a few limitations that the C++11 library doesn't. So the interfaces in some of the more esoteric areas are a little bit different, but in general it looks very similar and works very similar. In the latest versions of Boost. We've also picked up some of the things from C++11 and brought them back into Boost. So let's take a look at what we have here. Of course, it has mechanisms for locking and waiting on locks. We're going to talk about async, some promises and futures, and I'm not going to talk about package tasks, but it's a word, so you can look at it. As I said, they're similar. How might you do it? The old school way. Now, pthreads, of course, is still very important because it's generally the underlying interface for a lot of these threading libraries, and it's still used quite heavily. But what might it look like in the pthreads world? You will have a thread func. This is the thing that your thread is going to run. It has a very strict interface. It takes a void star and it returns a void star. There's generally some sort of casting involved with your parameter. you will probably, if it's got any complex logic in your code, want to do some locking at some point if you're doing something with a shared resource. You will maybe use a pthread mutex lock, do some work, and of course you have to remember to unlock once, always once, only once, unless you're doing something with some non-standard lock. Then your code to use this thing might look something like this. If you're initializing your mutex with something that's not the defaults, you have to call an initialization function. The way the APIs, because they're C APIs, are set up, of course, you have to pass L values in. And so I'm going to have to create some variables, some named variables to pass in so I can give their addresses. It all works great, obviously. It's been around for a long time. It's very stable. But, you know, we could probably do better. So let's say we do this, but with a lot less code. So this is what we could do with BoostThread and C++ 11 thread library. Say declare a mutex. I could of course give it some other values to initialize with. I have a thread func. It has an interface that I've defined. It's going to take an int, and I really don't have anything to return, so I'm just going to have void. When I go to do some locking on my shared resource, it obeys the SBRM RAII rules. And so there's no need for me to explicitly unlock it on every exit path from that scope. It's going to do the right thing. Now, for performance reasons, you may want to unlock immediately after you access your shared resource, just so that you're locking as little as possible. And you can do that. But if you forget, or if you leave the exception or something, it's going to make sure that you still get unlocked properly. The API, like I said, of my thread function I've defined instead of somebody else defining for me. I can just create my thread, give it my arguments. It's all very nice and simple. A lot less code, does exactly the same thing as I was doing with pthreads. But what if I don't even want to manage my threads? I just want to do something that's, asynchronous. I can do some cool stuff like this. I'm going to use a factorial here in a totally different context than all the other thread examples, which means it was an unfortunate choice. But here it's just an example of doing some time-consuming work. So let's say I want to do four of those things with different values asynchronously, go off and do a little bit of something else, and then come back and get my results. I can do that with the async method. In this version of Boost, I have to use the bind to bind my parameters to my method. If I'm not mistaken, I think in Boost 1.5.6, the bind is no longer necessary. In C++ 11, the bind is not necessary. It can pass the method and the parameters without doing the Boost bind, which is kind of nice because bind is kind of ugly. But it works. This does the job. When I do my async call, I get back something called a future. And what future is it's a thing that represents a value that I will get some point in the future. And so I just hang on to that future for a while and come back when I need my result and get it. And I would do that after, skipping a slide, I would do that after doing some work, come back, get my answers. These will block if my answer's not ready yet until it is ready. Since this isn't a whole lot of work, it's probably going to be ready by the time I get there. Get my answers, and then I can return them, and everybody's happy. Another cool thing with this style of programming, I haven't captured it in the slide, but generally throwing exceptions in threads, unless you contain them, is a very bad idea. You don't, because of the way threading works, it's not like just calling a function, get an exception back. In your bigger scope, threads don't travel exceptions don't travel across threads naturally. The async wrapping will help you with that. The future can capture an exception that was thrown in the other thread and give it back to you. It doesn't re-throw it in your current thread, but it at least gives you the ability to capture it and handle it. And so finally, after that, we're not going to talk about Boost SEO. And the reason we're not going to talk about it is because somebody already presented a great presentation on it here. And if you were there, you might have enjoyed it. If not, check out the videos when they come out, because it was a good one. But in brief, it's an NIO library. It handles IPv4 and V6 and streams and all kinds of other terms. It's natively multi-threaded, so you can have multi-threaded handlers, and it obeys all the same rules that we've been talking about. It does a really nice job. It's a good extraction library. So go check it out if you're interested in that. And with that,
any questions?
Go forth and boost. We can take some questions. Yeah, we should probably use the microphone so the camera can catch you.
So I know you said you weren't going to talk about Boost SIO, but I have a question about it anyway. As someone who's a big fan of Boost, why wouldn't you use Boost SIO or any of the other libraries you mentioned?
Why wouldn't you use it? Because it's kind of complicated. Some people don't like that. I don't think it's heavyweight. It's pretty efficient, but it does have a very specific model with the way it works. And if that's not, I think there's two reasons. If that's not the model you prefer, maybe it doesn't fit the paradigm of your application. Or if, you know, you've got maybe a C library that somebody wrote that's already does, you know, your network IO in a different way. Those might be reasons. I mean, if you're just approaching, I have a socket, I need to communicate over it, I need some code to glue it together, and I don't have a preference for how that gets done, then ASIO is a good choice.
Thank you. Treacherous coming back here. So I was looking more for an introduction to Boost. If I'm C++ 11 based already, mm-hmm. What is there, just very briefly, you know, like file system, classes, sort of thing? Why should I get into Boost at this point?
That's a good question. And we didn't present any of that. So I think the answer to that is Boost is huge. We wanted to present like some of our favorite parts that we actually use. The thing about Boost is that there's so many libraries there for so many different domains that it would be impossible to put them all in an hour. The answer specifically to your question is C++ 11 has picked up a lot of the things that were previously lacking, and so you don't need Boost for those. However, say ASIO or file system or some of the string algorithms that aren't in C++ 11. There's a lot of value add for the things that aren't yet in C++ 14 or may eventually be in C++ 17. Of course, I'm drawing a complete blank now, but there.
Fusion Spirit.
Right, Fusion Spirit. There's you know, if you want to do template metaprogramming, there's some really good libraries for that. So I think. I missed the Fusion talk. I wanted to see it. Does it have something to do with metaprogramming?
It's kind of caught between metaprogramming and regular classes, kind of a blend.
Right.
How do you do work in both? It's kind of hard to explain, but we use both C++ 11 and Boost pretty commonly. And the Boost libraries are far more extensive. A lot of things are now moved into C++ 11, like threads, but I would say we go with the preference of use STL first.
And that's the thing too. I mean, the standard has to stick a stake in the ground and say, this is it. And then Boost can, like with the async stuff that came back from the C++ 11 standards development. And so they can continue to move forward and say, okay, so now that we got this stake in the ground, what else can we add to make it bigger? It's designed to be used that way. I mean, there's always gotchas. Yeah, you have to be careful with your namespaces. But, but yeah, Boost is a superset, so Make sure you get a modern version. If you have a modern C++ 11 compiler, get a fairly recent version of Boost, and it's already been built on top of that. Right. Yeah, some of the interfaces will be a little bit different, but then, yeah, it's like, which do you prefer? Anything else? All right. Well, thank you for coming.